Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The original Land of Opportunity study in 2014 revealed that Charlotte didn't fit that description. Conducted by Harvard University's Raj Shetty, the study revealed that the Queen City was 50 out of 50 for economic mobility. In short, we had the lowest upward mobility for children born into poverty of any of the top 50 cities. Well, that sad truth was that if you were born poor in Charlotte, you would likely die poor here. To put it mildly, that didn't sit well with Charlotte. Officials, nonprofits, the faith community, the philanthropic community all sprung into action. Plans were devised and implemented. Millions of dollars were spent, all aimed at rectifying this blemish on Charlotte. And now a new Chetty study has been released, and it shows we're moving on up. We now rank 38th out of 50. Some say that's significant progress, but are we comparing apples to apples? We're going to take a closer look at that this hour, at the study, how it was conducted, what it really reveals, and the implications those results have for the future. And we're joined by several journalists who have been following this very closely. Eli Portillo is executive editor at WFAE News. Glenn Birkins is founder and publisher of Q City Metro. Alexandria Sands reports for Axios Charlotte. And Ben Thompson is an anchor at WCNC-TV and host of their Flashpoint program. Welcome back to you all. Good to see you.
Morning.
Nice to be morning.
And Eli, I'm going to begin with you, because when this study was released, the original study was released, the Charlotte Observer ran this headline: Land of Opportunity, not by a long shot. Charlotte is nation's worst big city for climbing out of poverty. That kind of sums up that original study back in 2014 that rocked us to our core. But did I leave anything out about how I described that?
You know, I remember being in the government center 10 years ago now as leaders talked about this study and held a presentation to unveil their response and what that would look like. And the atmosphere in the room was just, you know, pretty grim. I think what really struck home about this study was that it punctured a lot of Charlotte's self-image and kind of took the city down a peg, because, you know, Charlotte has always been portrayed, at least since I've been here, as this New South success story, this boom town of opportunity, and frankly, a place where there has not been as much of the overt racial tension as in many other southern cities. City leaders have always pointed to those things. And by highlighting the economic opportunity gap and a lot of the racial gaps in underlying that, this city or this study kind of struck at a lot of the city's foundational myths.
Yeah, Charlotte's usually at the top of lists, and that's where we want to be. But we don't want to be on the bottom of a list, particularly a list like this. Glenn, a few years after that original study came out, they came back. And even after the city had begun to try to address some of the deficiencies that study pointed out, they came back and revised some things a little bit that said perhaps that original study wasn't as bad as we thought it was. It indicated that one of the biggest predictors of higher mobility is two-parent households. And Mecklenburg County had one of the lowest marriage rates in the country at the time. That information was not part of the original study, but it did play a role in economic mobility. Do you know if that shortened the leap, that finding that, well, maybe we weren't as bad as we thought, shortened the leap from 50 to 38?
Well, I'm not sure about that. It's not altogether unusual for studies to be revised, for researchers to go back and look at new data. So I'm not altogether surprised by that. In fact, when I saw this report, this latest report, one of the things that I thought about immediately was how well this report will stand the test of time as well. Will there be some updating to this report as new data comes in? Even the federal government is constantly updating the data that underlies these reports. So we'll just have to see.
There was something else, Alex, about this original study that perhaps we don't take into account, because it listed Charlotte, the city of Charlotte, as 50th out of 50. But the study actually included what is known as the Charlotte Commuter Zone, which goes out as far as Rowan County in North Carolina and Chester County in South Carolina. And then it compared us to Atlanta, which was really the city of Atlanta, and to Pittsburgh, the city of Pittsburgh. I guess I have to ask, was it fair? Is it an apples to apples or an apples to oranges comparison?
Eli, you want to take that one? I'm not sure.
Well, I think that you're highlighting a lot of the complexity that's inherent in this kind of research. I mean, you're talking about examining millions and millions of people's life courses over decades between different cities with different geographies. And that is one of the issues here. This study looked at the life outcomes for people born in and around 1978. And there's a lot of variation in millions, and I think it was 50-some million people in the original study. So how you define not only those people, but where they live, is it a geographic zone, is it a municipal zone, is it county, influences a lot. And Chetty actually went more granular. You can zoom in all the way down to the neighborhood level and the census tract level there. So there's big differences within the city of Charlotte itself when you zoom in to, say, Eastover versus Greer Heights. That, I think, is one of the big issues with this research we've had all along, which is there are a lot of generalities when you say things like 50th out of 50, but the more you zoom in or zoom out, the more the picture changes as the lens changes.
Ben Thompson.
Yeah, more to Eli's point there, that original study covered from 1978 to 2005, the income taxes involved, and then the new one was from 1992 to 2019. So this is all delayed information. And so the city and its stakeholders are going through this process and making these improvements, but it's not clear yet what happens to kids born right now in Charlotte in 2024. It's not real-time information is the point here. And so I think that's one big thing that people have to keep in mind. This is now assessing people who are 30 years old and from when they were born 30 years ago.
Well, that's the other aspect of this new study, as when you compare it to the original study, Alex, because these are economic snapshots of two different groups of people, two entirely separate generations. Talk about that.
Well, we don't really know. It seems like a positive thing because we can't take into account all the kind of the progress that's happened, all the efforts that have been made since the 2014 study. So moving up from number 50, number 38 is impressive and could mean that in 10 more years we're even higher on the list if we keep up with some of the initiatives that we've started, because we haven't even seen the outcomes of those yet. So that could mean that Charlotte is just doing better as a city in general, and we haven't really seen the outcomes of things like the mayor's racial equity initiative or universal pre-K.
And we're going to talk about that. Glenn, the first group of kids that were studied, the first generation, was born in the 1978, 79, 80, somewhere in there. This new group of children was born in 1992. So not only are they two separate generations of children, they grew up in different time frames. And the city has changed substantially in those time periods, and it continues to change. Is that playing? Take all the stuff that we've done, which we'll talk about in response to the original study, push that off to the side. Would this have happened anyway?
Well, it's hard to say if it would have happened anyway, but I think your point is a valid one, that they are two different generations. One long before the internet really came of age. The other, we're talking about internet babies. So would it have happened anyway? Perhaps. Charlotte changed substantially even since 1992. So the children who were born in 1992 were, you know, their opportunities. Charlotte's economy has just swelled since then. Many, many more opportunities for economic advancement. that just, as you say, just happen naturally. So while I think everyone is happy that Charlotte is no longer ranked dead last, I think it's probably a little too soon to say that it is because of any concerted effort on our on the city's part, as much as a lot of this, I think, has to be attributed to Charlotte's general economic growth, which has been substantial in that period.
And Eli, that raises another question that I don't know the answer to because I haven't read the entire study. But this original study looked at young people living in poverty in 1978 or 1980, somewhere in there, and came to the conclusion that those people in 2014 had not progressed and found it incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to go up the economic ladder. Now it's looking at kids from 1992, and they're having an easier time of it, if you believe the results of this study. What does it say about the kids born in 1978 in the original study? Have their conditions improved, or do we know, or does this study look at that?
As far as I know, this new research does not look at that. What I think is important to note about the economic mobility and the advancement there is it's important to look at the absolute terms, too. So percentage-wise, the low-income people born in 1992 that the second study looked at, percentage-wise, their incomes have gone up versus the earlier cohort. But if you look at the absolute numbers, that low-income group, as, you know, 27-year-old adults, they still have a household income in this study of $28,000 a year. So we're not talking about people who are at the bottom of the income ladder rising to the top, you know, Horatio Alger style. We're talking about people making $28,000 versus inflation-adjusted $27,000 in the earlier study. So it's higher, yes, but I don't think anyone would say if your household income is $28,000 in Charlotte, you are having an easy time and have, you know, made it up the income ladder. That's still a household that's really struggling.
And I guess the other question, Ben, about this is, we moved from 50th to 38th, but did we do all the heavy lifting, or was that because other cities slipped?
Well, I think most of Charlotte can rejoice in knowing that Atlanta slipped. they actually fell to the 50th spot while we jumped to 38. I know anytime we can best Atlanta, it's always a good thing. So I think clearly there are cities that are doing better than others. Charlotte specifically ranked third highest for improvement in economic mobility over the last decade. So not only do we move up 12 spots, but we actually outperformed a lot of other cities out there. I mean, and keep in mind at the essence of this, what we're talking about here, because economic mobility is kind of a wonky term sometimes, but basically what we're talking about here is the American dream. Can someone come from nothing, up from the bootstraps, for lack of a better term, and really make something of themselves? And when I look at it in that term, that makes me sort of have a better appreciation for what we're talking about and why it's such a big deal and why Charlotte leaders took it so personally.
We're talking about both the original and the latest Chetty study out of Harvard University that puts Charlotte at 38th in the country for upward mobility. Dr. Raj Chetty is the Chetty that is referred to in that study. He will be a guest on this program, as he has been in the past, but he'll be a guest on this program on September the 4th, and we'll get into the nitty-gritty of this study. When we come back, we'll talk about where credit is due for whatever improvement we've been through and more. So stay with us. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Chetty study, which came out years ago, the original study did at least, that showed us 50th out of 50 for economic mobility of the 50 top cities. The newest study, which was just released, puts us at 38, so improvement has been forthcoming in the year since that original study, and a lot of work and a lot of money has been spent to do just that. We're talking about all this with Alexandria Sand. She's a reporter for Axios Charlotte. Ben Thompson is an anchor at WCNC-TV and the host of their Flashpoint program. Glenn Birkins returns after a long absence. He's the founder and publisher of Q-City Metro, and Eli Portillo is executive editor of WFAE News. So this is a good question for you, Eli, because WFAE Steve Harrison, our political reporter, reported recently that the improvements that Charlotte made in response to that first study came too late to impact anyone in the new group of children that is exhibiting improvement. So how do we explain the improvement?
Yeah, I think it's important to look at the time frame of the second study, which was 1992 to 2019, and then compare that to most of the efforts that the city has made. Some of those started in the immediate aftermath of the 2014 Chetty study, but a lot of them kicked off substantially later. The Mayor's Racial Equity Initiative, which is a $250 million public-private collection of programs, was announced in 2021. The Housing Trust Fund expansion, adding $100 million in housing bonds every 2 years for low-income housing, that's another thing local leaders have pointed to. Those, you know, a lot of those housing units haven't even been built yet. So we're talking about initiatives that started after the study period for the most part. And I think that's a big challenge, is Charlotte saw this improvement in ranking for the most part without doing anything. Look at the city's growth as a whole, like Glenn pointed to, you know, Charlotte, the economy boomed there. And I think, you know, if you look at some of the other cities that saw big improvement, like Brownsville, Texas was the number one improved city in Chetty ranking in terms of how much they moved up. Well, Brownsville, Texas had Elon Musk's SpaceX facility open there starting in 2014, which brought a ton of construction jobs and influx to that region. So I think that's a frustrating thing for policymakers, is you can't point to one thing and say, aha, that did it.
And so, Glenn, we've talked a little bit about what has happened in the intervening years economically, just in the city at large, having nothing to do with the study or the people involved in it. We just seem to have a lot of contradictions, it seems to me, as I read through this study and as I read through some of the reporting on this study. And I just referenced Steve Harrison's reporting, that the improvements that we've made in response to the first study have very little, if anything, to do with the improvements that we're seeing in the second study. And yet, when Raj Chetty was here to make this presentation about his second study, he said the results indicated large-scale policy changes might have played a role. Well, if all of the policy changes that we've done and all of the money we pumped in had nothing to do with it, how is that not a contradiction? Explain that to me, if you can.
I cannot explain that. I would go back to what I said earlier. I think you have to look at what was happening in Charlotte's economy. I think you have to look at what was happening in terms of in-migration. During that period, Charlotte saw a huge in-migration of professionals, Black professionals. Charlotte kind of became known as a Black Mecca for professionals, Black professionals. The offspring of those professionals, their kids, naturally, they're going to be better situated for economic mobility than they were in the 1970s. So it's not surprising. Opportunities have opened up generally for African Americans, for people in poverty. There are just more opportunities to move up. And I think Charlotte was able to ride that wave of economic growth that it saw during that period. I don't know if we're going to talk about it later, Mike, but one of the things Chetty's new study talked about was that although the economic gap, racial gap, still persist, Blacks in that study progressed much more overall than their white counterparts. So it should not be surprising that in a city that has seen the economic mobility or growth that Charlotte has seen, especially with the influx of African Americans, professional African Americans who have moved here, that needle would have moved somewhat.
Both Ben and Eli want to get in on this. Ben, go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's an underlying narrative here, and Glenn refers to it to a certain degree, but also speaking to the executive director of Leading an Opportunity, one of the programs created from this, hoping to address this, when I spoke to Sherry Chisholm about this, is this idea of transplants versus the longtime Charlottesians who've been here for a long time, people who've moved here for jobs, and that's a lot of people in Charlotte, who are really enjoying the fruits of Charlotte's progress, the arts and sports and things like that, and take part in all that and really thrive in that, versus some of the people and the generations of people who've been here in Charlotte for decades and decades, who are not able to enjoy some of the growth and arts and sports, which I think is a common thread through a lot of what we're talking about.
Eli.
And just one other large scale change in the city that I wanted to mention, because I think it adds to the theme of contradictions that, you know, I don't think we can fully explain, is the second study that found us doing better on economic mobility also coincides with the period that enforced busing was ending in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, and the school system was becoming more segregated again along racial lines. So, you know, the court ruling that ended that was in 1999, when the kids in the second study were 7 years old. So most of their schooling happened during the period of a pretty dramatic resegregation in Charlotte schools, which goes counter to a lot of the research we've seen that mixing folks of different income and racial backgrounds in schools is better for economic mobility. So that is another thing that, you know, I'm not a social scientist, I can't explain, but when I was thinking about what changed over this time during the second study, that's something that I was like, wait a second, that seems like it goes counter. So I think there's just a lot of questions that we don't have the answers to.
And here's another contradiction, because you just mentioned that black children did better. I think you just said this, Glenn, that black children improved more so than white children. And yet, Alex, Axios got an advanced copy of this study, which showed that Mecklenburg is the only county in the country that they studied where low-income white children did not experience any decline in economic mobility. So if they didn't go down and black children went up, what is the significance of the finding that low-income white kids in Mecklenburg did not experience any decline in economic mobility? What does that tell us, if anything?
I know that the study shows that black Americans born into poverty across the nation were doing better. And I think that possibly because Mecklenburg County had such an increase in income from the low-income children in the first study versus the second one, that possibly that played a role into why. But I'm not entirely sure what the answer is there to why Mecklenburg would be the only county in the country where white children did not experience a decline.
David on Facebook, one of our listeners, writes, did the second study track Charlotte-born kids or transplants, and I'll add, or both, in this new group? Do we know?
So my understanding is that it's Charlotte-born kids, but I don't know exactly how Chetty accounted for in-migration and out-migration, because populations, especially around here, are very, very mobile.
So, Ben, in your reporting on this new study, you mentioned that the original Land of Opportunity study led to the establishment of the Mayor's Racial Equity Initiative, also the 2040 Plan, and improvements at Johnson C. Smith University, among other things that the city sprung into action and accomplished. Do those directly involved with working to improve opportunities see those efforts as the reason for this improvement, despite what the study says?
Well, I think, you know, you talk to the mayor and most other city leaders, and they would say probably the most pressing problem facing the city of Charlotte is affordable housing. And so when you take a look at, you know, a big boost in the housing trust fund, and you look at the mayor's racial equity initiative and the free pre-kindergarten investment in that, workforce development programs, investments at JCSU, these things start to target some of the communities we're talking about. The delay comes in that we're not knowing whether or not these things are going to be working for quite some time, going off of this research at least.
Alex, go ahead.
I wanted to point out that also when I spoke to Leading Opportunities, and if you look at their role, is they track the progress in economic mobility, and their data shows that childcare is one of the areas we're doing the worst in, which is interesting because it's one of the areas where we spent the most money to establish universal pre-K. So that could be very significant moving forward if we don't address childcare and some of the issues North Carolina is having as a state, if that could affect economic mobility and different reports down the road.
So I know that they said that all of the improvements that we did had no impact whatsoever on this new group of young people because they hadn't taken place yet. We have pumped a ton of money into this, particularly when it comes to affordable housing. Voters in Mecklenburg County have gone to the polls in successive elections and voted for $50 million bond referenda to increase the supply of affordable housing, workforce housing. They did it last time to the tune of $100 million. Are the people that you're talking to, Alex, who are working hard to make improvements, do they believe that this will bear substantial fruit in the future if there's a third Chetty study?
Affordable housing's at the top of the needs because if people don't have a place to simply live, then they cannot go to work. And same thing with childcare. If you don't have a place to put your child, then while you're going to work, you can't make money and you can't help your child move up in the world. So those essential needs were really what we talked about during our discussion. And the funny thing about affordable housing is right now it seems like we have a record number of apartments opening in Charlotte, but now people are starting to slow down building because they don't want to build apartments where they have to keep the rent low. So we're kind of at this, that's a situation that's coming up now with Brooklyn Village. Tonight they're having discussion about how it's going to be difficult to make that project financially feasible because they would need to keep rents low in the economic market, yet they're trying to also create a development that has affordable housing units in it.
Mm. Glenn.
Mike, when you talk about housing, I think you have to really think about what was happening economically and politically when the children of that first study were born. They were born not that far removed from Charlotte's urban renewal. The political landscape was different. The economic landscape was different. Economic opportunities nationwide were different. And by the time that second cohort of children were born in 1992, and I can remember that year because that was the year that my daughter was born, things had changed considerably. We had moved much farther away from urban renewal, which destroyed Black communities in Charlotte. There were many more opportunities for economic advancement. As I mentioned earlier, the internet came of age for that group, which provided opportunities. So I think you have to think of what was the economic and political climate like when that first cohort of children were born?
Well, I know that Eli wants to get in on this, but Glenn, since QCD Metro concentrates on this community in a lot of its reporting, not all of it, but a lot of it, do you have any empirical evidence or anecdotal evidence that some of the things that we've done in the aftermath of the original Chetty study to make improvements are having an impact, that they're actually affecting the lives of people who live there?
I would agree with Steve's reporting that that most of that came too late to impact the second cohort.
Is it having an impact on the people who live there now?
Oh, in real time.
In real time.
That's a difficult question. I don't have any anecdotal indication that it is, and nor do I have any anecdotal indication that it's not. So I'm not sure how to answer that.
Eli.
So in order to duplicate the methodology of this study and look at the effects on kids who were born, in 2014 when the first CHETI study came out. Since then, you know, we're going to have to wait till the 2040s to wait until those kids are, 27, the same age as in the second group, and see how they do. So that's something that I think is a frustration for policymakers who are trying to get to these answers of are our efforts making a difference right now. And I talked to a researcher I know yesterday who said people need to remember that this is correlational research, not causational. So that's a little wonky, but it's really important to remember in the framing here that what this study and studies like it are looking at are what are the conditions and what can we say about does X happen when Y happens? What does that look like? They're not studies that look at from an experimental point of view, if we do X, then do we get Y? So these aren't studies that say, if we invest in affordable housing, do we get better outcomes? If we invest in pre-K, do we get better outcomes? And people, I think, have treated this research like it's causational, but it's correlational. It's looking and describing the picture, not prescribing the remedy.
Both the original CHETI study and the most recent one didn't just look at Charlotte. It looked at 50 other communities around the country. And as a reminder, those studies looked at what was going on. While household incomes between 1978 and the 1992 group went up 5% nationally, they went up 5% here. They declined nationally by 4.2%. That could explain our rise to a certain degree, even though the report says our efforts to make improvements have had nothing to do with the improvements. The mayor says they played an important role. Raj CHETI says what we've done has been inspirational. But Michael on Facebook asks if this is just another example of our overreacting. Atlanta or Raleigh were 49th and 48th in an earlier study, and they didn't seem particularly worried. We were apoplectic. I have 20 seconds, Ben. Go ahead.
Well, listen, we can't take all the good praise and all the compliments about what an amazing city we are and that we're best for this and best for that, and then ignore the bad stuff. So we've got to take the bad with the good.
But we were apoplectic, I must say. Yeah. We have to take a break. We're coming back with more on the CHETI study, the latest edition of it, and what that has meant and what we've done in the aftermath of the first and what that has done for the city, whether it's in the study or not. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Eli Portillo joins us. He's the executive editor for WFAE News. Glenn Birkins is founder and publisher of QCityMetro.com. Ben Thompson is anchor at WCNC-TV and host of their Flashpoint program. And Alexandria Sands is a reporter for Axios Charlotte. We're talking about the newly released second edition of the so-called CHETI study, which looks at upward mobility in Charlotte. In the original study, many years ago, we were 50th out of 50 cities. Now we are 38th, and that's cause in some quarters for celebration, despite the fact that Raj CHETI, who did the study, says our efforts for improvement have nothing to do with the improvements. It's a conundrum, but he'll be on the program September the 4th, and we'll ask him about it. Ben, you talk, as you've already said, to Sherry Chisholm. She came to Charlotte to be the executive director of Leading on Opportunity. That's an organization that came into being in response to the original CHETI study, and she recognizes the improvements that we've made, but she also says it's going to be hard to celebrate this moment because so many people remain mired in poverty and cannot seem to climb out of it. Do we know how many people this study can't point to in terms of raw numbers as having started the climb up? That's an odd question. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I think it's a fair question. While the numbers can remain somewhat elusive, I mean, Sherry's point is important in that we're still 38. There's a long way to go to improve that. And like Alex mentioned, I talked to her about childcare and things like that are so critical and a day-to-day issue for so many people that we cover, that you all cover at FAE, that aren't being addressed, but that come up in the General Assembly, all the time, as recently as last month or so. So these are real world impacts that are affecting these people, that to your point, we don't even, I think, have a good grasp of the numbers affected, and the scale of it, considering we are still 38, that there's not too much to celebrate beyond. 38 is better than 50.
Yeah. Alex, you spoke to Sherry Chisholm as well. She offered some additional prescriptions for improvement. What did she tell you?
I think in addition, we spoke a lot about how, like, there's not really one thing you can put your finger on. But, I mean, we've spoken about childcare, we've spoken about affordable housing. I think one more that's important to highlight is transportation. If people can't get to work, they cannot move up with their income. So that's important. And I think that if I was a city leader right now trying to get money for transportation, some kind of sales tax, I'd be pointing at this study and saying, this is something that we really need, and I would be trying to lift this up. I don't know if this has gotten the same attention as it did when, obviously, when 2014, we were 50, now we're 38, and I don't know if we're going to lose sight of that now, but this could be an opportunity to push for that.
She also said that more business involvement would be helpful. Was she specific about what kind of involvement? Because it was my impression that businesses, many businesses, sprang, particularly the large businesses, sprang into action as a result of the original study.
I think the point there is just, like, we've seen how much influence the business community has over these types of things. Things like Medicaid, when the business community became involved, they said that that's when that kind of got moving, the expansion that we had in the state. So if they could advocate more for things like childcare and say, like, hey, our employees, they don't have anywhere where they can have their kids feel safe and taken care of during the day, and that's affecting our work and our economy. I know that the NC Chamber had put out a number this year. I believe it was like the childcare issues in the state affect us by, we lose like $5 million. So it's definitely significant for the business community to be involved in that.
So Glenn, this original study shamed us. It shocked us to our core. It rocked us. We sprung into action. We've done a lot of things. Now this new study shows improvement, whether they're connected or not to what we've done. Doesn't seem to matter, because there was what we have called significant improvement in these two groups of young people that they've studied. Will that act as a propellant to keep the efforts that we've already embarked on going, or might it cause us to shift into neutral?
I'd be surprised if it caused us to shift into neutral. I've been here since 2000. And as someone pointed out earlier, that first study really pricked our ego and our sense of who we are as a city. I think that continues. I think I would be surprised if Charlotte leaders looked at this second study and said, we've arrived. I don't think anyone believes that. So I fully expect, not just based on, what I know about Charlotte, but also, what I think I understand about its elected officials and their priorities, that I don't think that these types of effort will end with Chetty too.
Ben.
Yeah, I don't think any of us doubt city leaders' commitment to addressing this. I think the question is, the more pivotal question is, what are state leaders' commitment to resolving some of these issues? Because as we brought up, whether it's Medicaid expansion, which happened, or childcare, or transit, a lot of these things are far bigger lifts than the city of Charlotte can do on its own.
Right.
Whether it's needing permission of the General Assembly to pass a sales tax, or it's something like childcare, or it's a Medicaid thing. These are all things that as much as you have city buy-in, you can have all you want. You need to have state leaders in the General Assembly in Raleigh buying in, and also seeing the urgency of now.
That leads to political will, Eli, and political will for politicians comes from what the nudging that they're getting from their constituents. So now we've gone from 50 to 38th, and in the interim, Charlotte citizens, voters, has stepped up to the plate and voted in hundreds of millions of dollars for affordable housing and made contributions in other areas philanthropically, et cetera, and through their businesses to support the improvements that we've been talking about here this morning. When we move up to 38th, will the public lose enthusiasm? Will they look at this and say, well, we've done a pretty good job, so no, I'm not going to vote for that another $100 million for affordable housing. We've done enough. The load is over.
Yeah, I've always wondered if the original report would have had the same effect if we were like 42nd. And, you know, I've kind of always thought it probably wouldn't have landed like it did. If you look at how people have voted, you know, things like housing bonds have always passed pretty easily. The transit tax has survived its repeal effort, was passed, you know, handily the first time. I think that this second Chetty study, to kind of address two of your questions, might not puncture and take the air out of our current efforts, but I do think it actually suggests some different places the city could spend its money. If you look at the last few years, city leaders have been really focused, spending a ton of time and political capital on affordable housing and transit. You know, transit hasn't moved forward, but it's, you know, eaten up a ton of time. If you read the second Chetty study, what he says correlationally, he observes as the biggest contributors to economic mobility. The biggest correlations are adult employment. If the parents are employed, the kids do better in the neighborhood, good health, and marriage. If parents are married, two-parent households. So, you know, you could, if you were a city leader or a state leader even, you could look at this and say, gee, Charlotte's spending a ton of money on transportation and affordable housing. Look, Chetty says in this new study, what's really important is health, employment, and stable families. Maybe we need programs to do focus on job training, marriage, and health.
Glenn.
Mike, I would I want to go back to the business aspect, and Eli hit on it just now when we talk about job training. Sometimes I think we tend to focus or over-focus on government spending. You know, can government spend more money here or there? I think business has a huge role to play in economic mobility in terms of job training, in terms of providing pathways out of poverty. Through apprenticeship programs, working with the schools to make sure that the students are graduating with the skills they need to get those jobs that are going to lead to upward mobility. That is what really lifts people out of poverty. That is what really provides economic opportunity. So I think, in addition to the lobbying and all the other things that we've talked about, I think business in Charlotte perhaps has a bigger role to play in this than anyone else. We've got to ensure that the children who are graduating today and tomorrow and next year, that they have the skills and that businesses are not having to look elsewhere to bring in other people from other countries or other parts of this country to fill these jobs. That's what leads to lasting economic mobility.
Here's a little cattle prod question, Eli. We were 50th in upward mobility. We are now 38th. But that means there are 37 cities ahead of us. Who are they? Give me some examples of what those cities are and perhaps what they have done that we could learn from to be 34th next time or 27th next time.
Well, if you look at what those cities have done, a lot of it is similar to, you know, programs Charlotte has, focus on housing, focus on housing vouchers. Say, one example Chetty has pointed to is, I believe, in Washington, in Seattle, Washington, a program that gave people housing vouchers in dispersed areas of the city rather than in, like in Charlotte, where housing voucher use is really predominantly concentrated in lower income areas. And by moving those families with children and housing vouchers to higher income areas, they observed better outcomes for those kids. So that has been the kind of program that Chetty has pointed to, where he says, look, if you can move kids to higher opportunity areas. His data set brand is the Opportunity Atlas, a geographic description of opportunity. He says if you can move children from low opportunity to high opportunity neighborhoods, you'll have better outcomes. That's been the biggest thing they've pointed to.
Isn't that something that we've tried to accomplish through the UDO, mixed-use housing in various areas, not all concentrated in one place? And there has been pushback to that, NIMBY pushback.
Yeah, there's been pushback. And, you know, if you look at how income is distributed around the city right now, it's super segregated. I don't think that's been successful. And, again, that's the kind of thing that would take a long time to pay off. And to get back to what Ben was saying, you know, something like banning housing voucher discrimination would require legislative buy-in. And there have been efforts in the legislature. I'm not sure exactly where they stand right now, but to ban municipalities from telling landlords you have to accept housing vouchers. So, again, that gets back to what can Charlotte do? What can the state stop Charlotte from doing?
This new study seems to fly in or be out of sync, I should say, with what we were told by yet another study that involved Charlotte and made us upset, and that was the Social Capital study that came out years ago, and I can't remember whether it was before or after the original study, but it revealed that most of us, no matter our race, when the workday is over, we go back into our corners. We don't socialize with people not like ourselves, and therefore we are not building social connections that last outside of work. And yet this new Chetty study says that Charlotte's improvement in economic mobility, quote, may be due in part to the prevalence of economic connectedness or the interaction between high-income people in low-income communities and the likelihood low-income people will form friendships with the high-income people with whom they interact. Unless something has changed about social capital, those two things seem to be in conflict. Are they? Am I missing something here?
No, I think you're right. And that's another one of these contradictions where it's really difficult to look at and find causation in these giant data sets that are based on, you know, disparate things, some of which are decades old. And I think one issue is you can't take a city like Charlotte, divide it in half, and have half the people form close interracial, interclass friendships, and the other half stay living in a segregated bubble and see what happens to their kids 25 years later. That would be the way to settle these questions once and for all that you're asking, Mike. But of course, in the real world, it's impossible to do an experiment like that.
Ben and Alex, and we'll start with Alex. From your reporting and the people that you've talked to, both the people who are involved in actively trying to fix things in Charlotte, or just people you've talked to who observe this and maybe pay some attention to it because they contribute to it monetarily, et cetera, what are people saying about where we must go from here and how we do it? Alex.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is childcare, because that's where we're lagging. Also just continuing the collaboration. That was something that was really stressed during my interview with Leading on Opportunities, is that we need to continue these public-private partnerships and making sure that the nonprofit sectors involve the business community and the politicians and everybody's working together to solve this problem.
Ben.
Yeah, I think you actually touched on when you talked about social capital is that also the idea, and Leading on Opportunity has talked about this, the idea of interacting and socializing and the importance that can be in a professional environment, and how that has been something in the past that has led to the current situation of people not being upwardly mobile, and the idea that if you have people interacting in more meaningful ways, that can help. But that's also something very difficult to address with any organization.
That was part of the study that probably had me scratching my head the most. While I think we would all agree that there's probably more integration and more interaction across racial lines and perhaps even across income lines, that was a curious finding.
Glenn Berkins is the founder and publisher of QCityMetro.com. Ben Thompson joined us from WCNC-TV in their newsroom, where he's an anchor, and he's also a host of Flashpoint. Alexandria Sands, reporter for Axios Charlotte, and Eli Portillo with WFAE News. Raj Chetty of the Chetty Study will join us on this program on September the 4th.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.